Soon we will be experiencing a holy and great council on Pentecost week, June the 16th through the 27th. And with us today to tell us more about this historic event is Father Stavros Akrotirianakis. Father Stavros is the parish priest of St. John Greek Orthodox Church in Tampa, Florida, and he also happens to be the director of St. Stephen's Summer Camp for the Metropolis of Atlanta. Good to have you with us, Father Stavros.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with how you would describe the need for church to meet on a broader scale, in the sense that we don't have one person who is in charge. We're conciliar.
Well, we have a tradition, a history in the Orthodox Church of the ecumenical councils. And the ecumenical councils were seven meetings that were held between the year 325 and the year 787. And the purpose of the councils were to make policy for the church. And unlike the Roman Catholic Church that has one figure at the head of the church, the Pope, who sets policy for the church, there are, in the ancient church, there were five ancient patriarchates. And each one had a patriarch, so Constantinople, Rome, Alexandria, Jerusalem, and Antioch. Those were the five ancient patriarchs. And so when they convened the seven ecumenical councils, representatives from all five churches came together to make policy for the church. And that's our history. That's our tradition. Now, after the split of the churches, the Orthodox Church from the Catholic Church in 1054, Rome is no longer a patriarchate. So we have now the four ancient patriarchates, as well as 10 additional autocephalous or self-governing churches. So we have, you know, the Church of Constantinople and the Church of Antioch and the Church of Jerusalem and the Church of Alexandria, and we also have the Church in Moscow and a Church of Greece and a Church of Romania and a Church of Albania, etc. And all those churches, they're self-governing. There isn't one person who makes policy for all those churches. And because the Orthodox Church is based on tradition and the traditions change in a conciliar way, in order to make change in the church, we have to get members of all the churches together. And so this hasn't been done in over 1,000 years. We haven't had all the churches, representatives from all these churches, sit down to make policy together for all the worldwide Orthodox Christians.
So I can only imagine the administrative side of getting this together, and I know that the Orthodox Church worldwide has been anticipating this meeting that is coming upon us really quick. In the past, councils were there to clear up theological issues or dogmas. During this council, there are new issues, which we can only imagine since it's been 1,000 years, you know. There are, however, six topics that are being discussed. Can you describe those for us?
Sure. You know, and I want to go back to something you said about just the preparation for this council, which started over 50 years ago. I mean, it's taken 50 years not only to bring the people together, but to agree on the topics and to agree on which things under each topic are being discussed. There's been pre-conciliar councils, many of them over the course of the last half century, and to think that, you know, people who started this 50 years ago are no longer with us as church leaders, and another generation or two of church leaders have come in and have picked up the mantle just to get to this point is a monumental task in itself. So when the hierarchs and church leaders get together in Crete, there are five topics that they have absolute agreement on what they're going to discuss, and then there's a sixth one that doesn't have unanimous approval but is going to be discussed. So the topics are the mission of the Orthodox Church in today's world, which, you know, the Orthodoxy is the second leading Christian religion in the world, but where is the place of Orthodoxy? Are we evangelical church? Are we supposed to be actively recruiting other people? There are many issues that go along with what is the place of the Orthodox Church in the world today. The Orthodox diaspora. There are Orthodox countries, like Russia is an Orthodox country. Most of the Christians there are Orthodox, and they're under the Patriarchate of Moscow. But when you come to a country like the United States, as an example, we have Greek Orthodox, we have Russian Orthodox, we have Antiochian Orthodox, and we have the Greeks, the Greek Orthodox, as an example, are under the Patriarch of Constantinople, and the Antiochians are under the Patriarch of Antioch. And you could have a Greek Orthodox bishop and an Antiochian bishop both being bishops in the same city, which is something that is not allowed according to the canons. But when, and the canons are the rules by which our church is governed, and the canons are basically a product of the ecumenical councils, and so when the canons were written, they didn't foresee the situation we have in America. They didn't foresee a diaspora. So that's an issue. Are we doing things in a way that's canonically okay? Is there a way we can clean ourselves up a little bit administratively? Can we be more effective and more efficient in how Orthodoxy is spread and lived in the diaspora? And the diaspora, again, means non-Orthodox countries. Another topic is autonomy and the means by which it is proclaimed. Of the 14 churches, four of them are ancient patriarchates, and the other 10 became self-governing churches by a process called autonomy. And so sometimes that was done in an orderly way. Sometimes historically churches just broke away and declared their own autonomy. But in the Orthodox Church, we're a church of order, and so everything is done in good order. And so there really needs to be something put down that says, what's the order of a church becoming more independent and even self-governing? We don't have anything written down because, again, when the canons were written, it didn't foresee the creation of other independent churches. They just had the ancient patriarchates. The fourth topic is the importance of fasting and its observance today. The rules on fasting, some of those rules don't really apply in the world today. As an example, the reason we fast from wine and oil is because they used to be stored in the skins of animals. And fasting is about not commingling our blood with the blood of any animals. And so if one looks at the fasting rules, the reason for the fast from wine and oil doesn't exist anymore. So do we keep that tradition because it's a tradition, or do we update that tradition? And again, realizing that many people in the Orthodox world do not strictly fast, what is the way that we can be effective and continue to encourage people to keep a realistic fast? The fifth one is the relationship of the Orthodox Church with the rest of the Christian world. What is the position of the Orthodox Church in the ecumenical movement? Should we be having relationships with the Catholic Church, with Protestant churches, with non-Christian churches? Should we be involved in trying to unite the church? Should that even be a goal of the church, to unite all the churches under one umbrella? And the interest in that varies from place to place. So this council would give some guidance to all Christians as to what is the position of the church on that. And then the last issue, where there wasn't unanimous consent on how it was going to be discussed and dealt with, is the issue of the sacrament of marriage and its impediments. And in this issue, the Orthodox Church reaffirms the sanctity of marriage, that's between a man and a woman. What are impediments to marriage? You can't marry your relatives, cannot marry a fourth time, cannot marry if you're already an ordained clergyman. There are certain impediments that historically have been put in place, and so it's a time to review and, if necessary, revise some of them. So those are the issues.
And those are lengthy.
Oh, yes.
They have 11 days, per se, mm-hmm. to tackle these and come to unanimous consensus, which is not a majority vote. It's a unanimous consensus.
Correct.
Meaning that they all have to be in agreement.
Correct. And that is done in order to promote unity. You know, if you have, 100 people voting and you say, well, the majority is 51 and something passes 51 to 49, well, you have just shy of half the people upset with the outcome. You know, consensus seeks to have unanimous agreement. And when you have 14 churches, in order for something to pass by the council, as the rules that they have created have stated, they will need approval from all 14 of the churches. They'll have to have unanimous consensus.
So interesting. How will the decisions of the council affect our daily lives in America?
That's the big question. There are a lot of people that are weighing in on this council. There are people who are very excited about it. There are people who are very skeptical about it. There are people who think that this is going to have broad-ranging effects on our church, and there are people who think it will have no effects at all. And we really won't know until they've had the council and see where the discussions lead and where the Holy Spirit leads the discussions. The most important thing about the council is that it's historically doing something that hasn't been done in 1,000 years. As our Metropolitan Alexios said eloquently at a presentation that he gave on this that I was fortunate to attend, he said, just the fact that we're all sitting down at the same table, at a table of Eucharistic unity and a table of brotherly love, where we want to sit down and advance the gospel of Jesus Christ through the proclamation of the Orthodox faith, just sitting down at the table and doing that is a big accomplishment. If nothing else, it opens the door for further dialogue. Having the bishops gathered together always strengthens the church as a whole, because to be Orthodox means to be part of the whole. There's no independent Orthodox. And then these decisions, you know, a lot of them are theological decisions with practical applications, and so we'll have to wait and see what kind of practical direction the council comes to consensus on, at which point, you know, they would let the church know that these are some new policies that the whole church is adopting, and then they would ask us again as Orthodox to follow the lead of our hierarchs. And you know how beautiful it is when one of our hierarchs comes and visits our churches, because it doesn't happen that often.
Right.
And then if you have an occasion where there may be two or three hierarchs serving, which we've experienced here when Archbishop Demetrius will come and will co-celebrate with Metropolitan Alexios or another metropolitan, but to have the 14 hierarchs of the independent churches stand at the altar together and co-celebrate a liturgy, I mean, it must just be something spectacular, because it doesn't happen.
Exactly.
You know, at all. And then for them to sit and dialogue in conference for 9 or 10 days, I mean, about things that affect the entire church, to think that something that could happen both in Russia and in the United States, and to feel a bond with Orthodox Christians that are, you know, far around the world in places we'll never see and visit, just the whole concept of that is just fantastic.
I agree. I think it is. It's amazing. And if you're looking for more information on the Holy and Great Council, you can go to two different websites for that. There's the official website, holycouncil.org, but you can also visit the Ecumenical Patriarch Press Office at orthodoxcouncil.org. And between those two links, get, I think, all the information that you would require in order to participate and be a part of this really amazing time in history.
Can I add something?
Absolutely.
Well, you know, one of the things that when we live in one town our whole life, we go to that church, we go to one church for many, many years, maybe even our whole life, we go to one church, we forget that we're part of a much bigger church. I mean, we forget that there are people living, you know, in Siberia, in Russia, where, you know, it snows all year round, and they're out there, and they're blessing the waters on the very cold rivers. We forget that there are Orthodox Christians in little villages in Africa and in small but thriving communities in Asia and Australia. We forget that, and to be able to go to the table with all of representatives of all of these churches from all kinds of lands with all kinds of histories, I mean, it's just really a fascinating thing. It's a really historical moment.
Thank you so much for being with us and for helping to explain such a challenging topic. You really did help me and help us understand, you know, in layman's terms, what exactly is going to be happening during those really wonderful 11 days.
Well, thank you for having me, and I want to encourage everyone, as His Eminence Metropolitan Alexius has encouraged the clergy down here in the South, that we should be praying for the Holy Spirit to really shine in the hearts of those that will be involved in this council, because what they're going to do is going to affect us all in some way. So it's a great time for us that are not at the council, that are around the world, to unite our thoughts and our prayers, asking for God to bless all those who are coming to that table in Crete.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. God bless you.